The Umbrella Corporation thought they'd contained the infection.
Well, they were wrong.
Raccoon City was just the beginning. Within weeks, the T-virus had consumed the United States. Within months, the world. The virus didn't just wipe out human life. Lakes and rivers dried up, forests became deserts, and whole continents were reduced to nothing more than barren wastelands. Slowly but surely, the Earth began to wither and die.
I have clapped.
You did it. It's done. Hey, everybody, and welcome back once more to Podcast Part 3, the Part 3 Podcast. I can't think of two adjectives. This movie has sapped me of my brain. But we are the podcast for all things about two movies. Fuck, I'm starting over. This.
Your go-to source for clones that came after two other movies.
Oh, God. Anyway, hello, everyone, and welcome back once again to Podcast Part 3, the Part 3 Podcast, your one and only source for all things about movies that came after two other movies. As always, I am Sam.
And as always, I am Will.
And we are... I did this one. This one's on me. I pulled a
this
Will.
This is all your fault. You don't have to blame... You can't blame me on this one.
I willed so hard on this one. We are talking about 2007's Resident Evil Extinction. It's the third in a surprisingly, six-movie franchise based on a video game?
Six movies across 14 years. Yeah.
Yes. From 2001 to 2016, give or take.
15 years. Yeah.
This is our first video game adaptation.
Yeah, none of them, I don't think any of the, and probably the only until Super Mario, I guess, makes it.
we got a third Sonic. Sonic made it to three.
Sonic 3,
but
yes.
Look,
yes.
Up until about 5 minutes ago, video game movies were one of the most notoriously unsuccessful subgenres of filmmaking. Dating back now 30 years of attempts, it's almost always fallen flat on its face for various reasons, either straying too far from the subject matter, like the 90s Super Mario Brothers, or just them being cheaply made, or not taking it seriously, or just all around being bad.
Yep.
You know, yep. And for whatever reason, the Resident Evil... which came out, I believe, in 2001, and directed by Paul W.S. Anderson, who up to that point had already done a video game movie with Mortal Kombat, which is...
one of the better ones.
It's one of the high watermarks. I would say, up to that point, the best ones were, Mortal Kombat and Street Fighter, both of which were still very silly movies.
Very stupid movies, yes.
And it's based on a... I'm going to say right now, I'm not a gamer. I'm going into this... for the entirety of this movie, this film franchise, I've known absolutely fuck all about the Resident Evil video games beyond what leaks out through cultural osmosis, like that one that came out a couple years ago with the really tall, vampire lady.
Right. Yeah, I watched someone play the first two Resident Evil games, or parts of them, not all the way through, and then I played, and I put this in air quotes, I played Resident Evil 3, but I'm very bad at 3D video games, so pretty much the majority of me playing Resident Evil 3 was being stuck in a wall. I couldn't navigate my way through any of the puzzles.
And I play video games, but I almost always am one or two generations behind on the consoles, so I was and my folks wouldn't let me have video games growing up. My mom didn't want us to have a console in the house, so I missed PlayStation, I missed N64, I missed GameCube unless I went over to someone else's house. But long story short, the first couple came out in the 90s and were pretty from Capcom, it should be said, pretty landmark survival horror movies that are survival horror games that have the series evolved at that point into sort of more of a first person shooter or a third person shooter. It's got a pretty extensive lore, it's got a lot of recurring characters that fans really like, and it should be noted that none of them are the character Alice, who is the face of this entire film franchise, played by Mila Jovovich. She's not in the games. She has nothing to do with the game. She's never been inserted into the games. It's really remarkable that this went as long as it did while taking vast liberties with the games.
Huge liberties. I mean, it's really kind of funny that basically it sidelines all of the main characters from the games, I mean, from what I understand, and basically inserts what amounts to a Mary Sue as a character.
She's... Well, the thing is, it would be... If say... Like, think of Half-Life. Half-Life has Gordon Freeman, and he's like a mute character, and he has a design, but you never really see his face. He's kind of a non-entity character. I think of Alice kind of like that, in that if you told me that the games were you're playing from the POV of Alice, but you never really get to know Alice as a character, like she doesn't have a voice, you never right. see her face, I'd believe that.
Yeah.
But it's just like the first one, I don't know for sure, but the first Resident Evil movie, I think, has like no characters from the games.
Yeah, I guess it doesn't. Or the, what's his name? What's his name? Who becomes Nemesis? I think, or maybe it's just Nemesis.
I mean, whoever Nemesis was before he was Nemesis, but you don't see Nemesis until the second game. Basically, like, yeah, the second. I can tell in any of these movies who's a video game character, like, because they've got a very distinct outfit and they look ridiculous. Like in the second movie, where it's the whole city is devolving into a zombie apocalypse, and it's. Police officer Jill Valentine's got to go home and put on her blue tank top and mini skirt and her shoulder holsters, and I'm like, oh yeah,
she's the one in the video game.
You're from the game.
That's the character that you play in Resident, or one. I think you can play as two characters in Resident.
I think
Evil
it's her
3.
And Chris Redfield, who you don't see in the movies until like the fourth one.
Yeah,
you see his sister. You see Claire Redfield in this one, played by Allie Larder, and this one has, I think, some of the first appearances of some of the big characters from the game. I think this is the first movie in the series where you get Albert Wesker, who's kind of he's the most notable villain from the games who isn't, you know, a zombie.
Yeah, and I really only know him because he shows up in Marvel vs. Capcom.
Yeah, that's, I know him from Marvel vs. Capcom. He's just a smug douche who wears sunglasses indoors, and, you know.
Especially in this one, he's just sort of like a corporate figurehead.
He's not, like, they're clearly setting him up to be a big villain in this.
Yeah.
He's basically playing the same role in this as Snoke does in The Force Awakens, where he just is checking in via hologram throughout and being like, "Don't fail us. It would be a shame to have to terminate your work, Doctor." And the main villain is Dr. Isaacs, played by Ian Glen, who is just, you know, he's just like...
He loves being evil.
These guys don't know when to quit. At what point... The whole movie opens with a new Alice clone. Alice is your main character, played by Mila Jovovich, and she has no memories, and she's a super badass. And in this movie, as of the end of the prior movie, she has superpowers, too. She's like telekinetic... and can create force fields and all sorts of shit, and she's like a super zombie hunting badass, but she's a clone, or like they have tons of clones of her, and they keep waking up a clone and seeing how far they can get through a series of like saw traps before they get killed, and they just then drag it out and make a pile of dead Mila Jovoviches out in front of the military base. And I'm just like, at what point do you just be like, oh, this isn't going to work?
Yeah,
how many do you burn through before it's like, this isn't going to pan out?
And so the idea is, so at least the cover, right? They're doing these experiments on the Alice clones so that they can cure the zombie outbreak that they created.
Yes, the zombie outbreak that they created from the this is the Umbrella Corporation, which in the first movie is headquartered in Raccoon City. I don't know, folks. That's from the games. But they create this virus called the T-Virus, which you find out in later movies was originally developed by the co-founder of the company to help his sick daughter, but it mutates and becomes makes zombies, and it gets out, and there's zombies everywhere. And
then they have to fix it, or at least that's the cover story he's given to fix it, and they're making it, they have to have these... they have to have the Alice clones run through the traps from the first movie so that they can...
This franchise is what would have happened if if they'd gone in the wrong direction after, like, Aliens.
Well, this is
it would just be, at this point, the franchise would be like, let's keep doing weird shit with the Xenomorphs and cloning Ripleys to see if they could fight them off.
Well, this is the thing, that these movies sort of, at this point, they become Alien Resurrection fan fiction, but on top of that, also, like, James Cameron fan fiction, Miller fan fiction,
look, this one
Romero fan fiction.
I will say that this one is one of the probably better ones in the series. Like, the first one's pretty fun as zombie movies go. I have, I guess, fond much like RoboCop, the RoboCop movies. We only had one premium movie channel on cable when I was in high school, and it was Encore. And this movie was on Encore maybe every night at, like, 1 a.m. So I have just all these memories of, like, waking up after falling asleep on the couch, and it's just Alice walking through that mansion for what feels like a half an hour before the movie begins, like a weird overture. So there's that one. There's Resident Evil Apocalypse, which is one of the dumber movies.
It is spectacularly stupid, but I enjoy that movie because it is a lot of fun. I think it's more fun than the first one in some ways.
Yeah, it is. The first one, and I hadn't really realized this, we were just reading a very nice oral history of the franchise, and the first one came out pre 28 Days Later. Like, this was before this. The first one was a hard sell.
Yeah.
Like, Paul W.S. Anderson went to Constantine Films, which is a German production company, who I think most notably have somehow to this day kept their claws in the Fantastic Four as a property. So they famously did the 1994 version to retain the rights, the one that was never meant to be made. They did the two in the 2000s. They were involved with Fanforstic, and they are uncredited but still involved in the Marvel one.
Are they really? I didn't even realize that.
That's still insane. Have their claws in it. And the other big thing they do outside of German movies, they've been a production company since the 50s, I think, is they produce a lot of Paul W.S. Anderson's movies because, honestly, he's made a ton of money for them. Like, these movies were not... They did okay in the U.S., but these are big international hits, and I can see why. They kind of got a bit of everything, and the first one was internationally produced, did surprisingly well, and was sort of right ahead of the big early 2000s zombie boom. So I think it was not something people had seen in a while. Like, they'd been developing it all through the 90s. Like, Romero was attached at one point.
Yeah, there was going to be a documentary all about Romero making this movie, and I don't know if that ever got off the ground or not.
Yeah.
But it had a couple
of big names. Like, Michelle Rodriguez had just broken out as a big star. Mila Jovovich had been a big name since the 90s, since Fifth Element, and so she was kind of a big name. And I mean, it's as dumb as a bag of hammers, but it spawned you have to be doing something right to go six movies over a decade and a half.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that, you know, there is something to be said that Anderson was kind of smart, being like, well, let's sort of leave the game characters and the game lore to the games, and we're just gonna kind of do our own thing. And I don't know. I mean, these were even popular in Japan, so it wasn't like it pissed off the fans of the games, you know. So,
and it worked in a way that other video game movies that try to bring in an original character don't, like that last Mortal Kombat. No one was going to see that for that main guy.
It's like the Cypher dude, and you're like, why would you do this?
Bobby Forgettable.
Yeah.
He's in the new one, but it is like you can see him in the background. Yeah, Johnny Cage is here. Carl Urban's here. He's got this.
I mean, not to get us on a tangent, but the new Mortal Kombat is so frustrating because it ditches also the built-in structure that makes a Mortal Kombat movie like easy to make, which is, you know, Enter the Dragon. You just follow that.
Paul W.S. Anderson knew this.
He did. He was like, this is Enter the Dragon meets Star Wars. Go.
He's also, to his credit, always prioritized whatever he's the most passionate about at the time.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't come back for Mortal Kombat 2 because he was making Event Horizon.
Yeah.
And Event Horizon's a pretty good movie.
Yeah.
He didn't do the second Alien versus Predator because he was doing Death Race. which is also a pretty good movie.
Yeah, and he didn't do well, and he didn't do the second Resident Evil because he was doing Alien vs. Predator, and then probably didn't do this one because he was doing Death Race, or was he? Or maybe he was just producing it.
He was just producing. He was in. Yeah. I think he's always done the story. I think he was a little more hand. He was. He said in that in
that's right. He's on, he history, was on set. Yeah.
He was on set for this one, but not the second one. And I don't think he or Mila Jovovich is particularly happy with how the second one turned out. That was also directed by a guy who's mostly known for second unit stuff. He's like Ridley Scott's go-to second unit guy. And this one was Russell Mulcahy, Highlander.
And the Shadow.
And The Shadow. And Razorback.
And Highlander 2, The Quickening.
The poor man's Ridley Scott, as Quentin Tarantino described him.
Yeah. So it looks really good. I mean, that's like one of the things I think why this is stands out amongst
it,
the
it
movies.
Looks good
it looks
like
really
if
good.
You look at it enough, you watch it closely enough, you can tell it looks good and they're working on a pretty low budget.
Yeah.
It really is like, it's that Australian Mad Max aesthetic. They get it. It's like, just got to chop up a bunch of buses and work with what you got, baby.
Exactly. The seams in the budget really show in when the birds attack. That's when I was like, oh my God, this is close to Birdemic levels.
No, the CG in all of these movies, up to maybe like the last two, where
it's pretty ropey,
It's pretty, but the practicals are great. Like, this one has like they do like the usual zombie dogs, and it's practical effects, and it looks really good.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and you know, a lot of it is such a George Miller riff. And I think my thing about this franchise that makes it so fascinating is that it really walks this tightrope line between stupid and awesome. Like, it's just, you know, there are like moments where and this is kind of true of a lot of Paul W.S. Anderson's movies, where they're like it just, there's like this moment where you're like, oh, this is awesome. And then it just tips over into being truly dumb.
He just somehow knows how to make a really good, like not good, but like a really dependable schlocky movie. Like it's rarely boring. It moves. It's, they're all like a brisk 100 minutes. I'd say very few of his movies I've ever seen where I'm like, I'm, except for the opening of Resident Evil, which just somehow is just like ambient for me. I don't, it's just because it's like,
well, it is that they're just wandering around that mansion.
She's just wandering around a mansion and it's, you don't know what's going
the
on.
The curtains are sort of flowing and you're like, what is happening here? Yes.
His movies all are very efficient and pretty solid B movies. Like, we've talked about Alien vs. Predator before, and, you know, it's a solid movie. Like, it's not on the level of the best of that franchise, but nothing is. Event Horizon's a lot of fun, Mortal Kombat's a lot of fun, Death Race is a lot of fun. You know, like, he also knows to fill his movie with, like, character actors who understand the assignment.
Right, yeah, that is also the thing about this movie, too, is, like, none of the actors are phoning it in. Everyone's, like, they're all, like, giving the right amount of shit. You know what I mean? Like, Oded Fehr is here. He's having a great time. Like,
Ian Glenn is having a great time as the villain. He comes back for Final Chapter, and he's great in Final Chapter because he's playing two characters.
Right.
He's playing the actual Dr. Isaac. Spoiler alert, this Dr. Isaac is a clone. You don't know this for another three movies, but he's a clone. the real one, but also another clone of him, who thinks he's the real one and is like trying to get back to the hive throughout the movie and is going completely insane as he does it.
Oh my God. This series is like also just gets so complicated the more it goes on. And even though it kind of ignores like the previous, whatever happened in the previous movie,
there are only like two where it actually follows through with like what's set up at the end of the prior one. And that's like the second one. The first one leads directly into the second one, and then I think, like, Afterlife might lead directly into Retribution,
but the end of the last one,
she's got superpowers, and she's a sleeper cell, like, hanging out with them. Nope, she's on her own, she's got superpowers, she's not controlled by anybody.
Right.
She's gonna have a bunch of Alice, at the end of this one, she's got a bunch of Alice clones, there's a whole army of Mila Jovoviches are gonna take the fight to the Hive. 10 minutes into the next movie, oh, they're all dead, she doesn't have superpowers anymore. The end of Retribution. She's got to team up with Wesker to fight the Red Queen. It's the last stand, and it's at the White House. Cut to the beginning of the next movie. Everyone's dead. Wesker was lying. She doesn't have her powers back. The Red Queen's actually on her side. It's just like, Oh my god. And I think they just are like, you know what, we like this idea better. Or it is just like we couldn't get these actors back.
Right.
It really is like it. I don't know the Resident Evil video game fan base enough. But, like, I feel like any of those decisions, like, the end of Retribution ends with, I think, for the first time, maybe, like, four or five actual video game characters and Alice, like, teaming up. And the implication at the beginning of the next movie is they're all dead. I feel like that would make most fans really angry.
Yeah, I mean, what I remember about when the last movie came out is that it didn't do very well. So
no,
maybe
they all do better internationally, but yeah. I think they were like, it was called The Final Chapter. I think they were all just ready to move on to other stuff. He was ready to move on to Monster Hunters.
Monster Hunter. And then a movie of his just came out this year.
Yeah, it's called In the Lost Lands. It's based on a George R.R. Martin thing, and it's Dark Tower as fuck.
Gotta check it out. I don't know.
I'm just like, I saw it and I was like, oh, this is another one of those, like, this is like if you were the girl from The Ring, this is the VHS I'd have to watch. It's just this dystopian cowboy David Bautista Mila Jovovich movie.
Which, again, could either be really awesome or really stupid.
It's like he's still making the kind of movies you were desperately trying to get me to watch on, like, a Saturday evening in the late 2000s.
Yeah.
Like, dude, we gotta watch The Mutant Chronicles. And I'm like, dude, we don't gotta do anything of the sort.
We gotta watch The Mutant Chronicles and Babylon A.D.
Outlander, but not the Outlander you're thinking of.
Yeah, the one with Jesus, but he's an alien.
No, you're thinking of Prometheus.
Oh, right.
Yeah, zombie dogs and CGI maps of facilities. That's what this franchise does best.
Big. And, you know, the other thing, I know that they talked about it, and I'm surprised it never happened, was the Underworld Resident Evil crossover. Because they were both made by Sony, it seemed like it was kind of...
Yeah, they're both their screen gem, the crown jewels of screen gems.
And they're both like this, again, they both have that same level, although I think the Underworld movies take themselves far more seriously than this series does.
Their lore is far too pure and unblemished to sully itself with
But they
this.
Do, they both ride on that line of like stupid and awesome, and I just...
The Underworld movies are so boring. Like, I'm sorry. they're a better idea, like in my head I like them better, like the concept better, but these movies are like, you want zombies jumping on people, we got you zombies jumping on people. You want like Mila Jovovich, you want to, have you been really like, I need to spend a lot of time with a specific 2.5 inches of Mila Jovovich's inner thigh. This is the movie's got you back.
Yeah. Well, it's like, do you want to see Mila Jovovich slice up a bunch of zombies with those weird, like, half knife things?
While wearing really riding the line between an outfit that's sensible and inappropriate for a desert apocalypse.
Exactly. And they make this noise whenever she's flipping around.
Oh,
so.
My God. Yeah.
It's kind of incredible. And
I liked this one, though. I liked all the supporting characters. I liked the little, like, Ali Larder and Oded Fair's little convoy, because it's got Johnny Cage as like a cowboy sniper trucker dude. I like him. I like the like tech twink. I like Kmart. I like Ashanti as the nurse.
Yeah.
Mike Epps looks like so out of place in this movie.
He's a carryover from the last one, but he
right. He
Apocalypse.
Made more sense in that movie, which was like he was like a petty crook and stuff.
Yeah, he was just kind of a guy, but here he gets the requisite, turned into a zombie, didn't tell anyone, and then gets shot.
Yeah. Robbing us of future Oded Fair in the movie.
Ah, man, that bummed me out, because I love him. I love that actor, and I love it when he shows up in things, and
that's why you want to watch Retribution, where it's...
because he comes back as a clone.
They've cloned all the characters the fans like from the prior movie, so it's like... It's like just a bunch of Michelle Rodriguez's and Colin Salmons and Oded Fair's running around. That movie's the biggest lie, because it's marketed as they're all back, and the tagline was "Evil Goes Global," and it was like she's gonna go to Moscow, New York, Hong Kong,
and then it's like a weird this Matrix thing,
underground facility.
It doesn't make any sense as to why they did it that. Oh my god, that movie is so weird.
Albert Wesker explains it quite smugly. It's we sold them. We released the virus in a simulation of Tokyo, sold it to the Chinese. Released it in Hong Kong, sold it to the Japanese. I'm such a piece of shit. I wear my sunglasses indoors. Am I in charge of the company? I don't know.
What does the company do? I don't know.
They make
They're a pharmaceutical corporation.
I'd like to think they bought Sony, and that's why you still get Vios and yes. In the apocalypse.
Yeah, it's yes. Everyone is operating on a Vio laptop,
and somehow her tricked out Apocalypse motorcycle still has a very pristine BMW logo on the back.
But one thing that watching this made me very nostalgic for was this era where movies would get theatrically released that was just sort of like schlock, just genre schlock, and it would be pumped out into the theater, and it would people would go see it, and then, you know.
I mean, came out at a perfect time for us. This was an era where we would go see everything.
Yeah.
Like, we would go, like, January. I'm so bored. Yeah, I'll go see Hostage with Bruce Willis and Kevin Pollak. I don't know what it's about. I don't care. I want to sit in a dark, air-conditioned room. Like,
yes, exactly. It makes me very nostalgic for that. And I think it's a similar thing for, you know, Tarantino being nostalgic for the Grindhouse era. Just sort of like when filmmakers were given modest or little more resources than normal and being like, just make the thing.
It was also a shared experience. I mean, these weren't like crowd pleasers. This wasn't like when we went to see, you know, Casino Royale or something, and the crowd was really into it. But going to the movies was a shared experience. Like, look at, we're talking about this just after the weekend. K-pop Demon Hunters, Sony sold it for like pennies to Netflix, and it went to streaming. It's a huge hit, and it just won the weekend on a limited theatrical run. People want to go to the theater and see something that's, I don't know if Resident Evil Extinction counts as a good movie, but it's a fun theater going experience. We talked about this with Naked Gun. It's the same thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, Sinners earlier this year too, like that sort of lit the box office on fire. It's sort of I think people want.
But of course it's going to be the same thing as always. The studio's takeaways. I mean, well, people want more vampire movies.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Make a bunch of vampire, maybe a vampire movie said, you know, they make death metal in this one. K-pop vampire hunters. Yeah. I don't know why my studio executive is sort of a Dan Aykroyd character.
Well,
it's like, yeah. We get 25 miles to Chicago.
You make me another vampire picture. But no, I mean, you're absolutely right. It's the studios always take the wrong lessons from success. And it's not like, oh, audiences are clamoring for something a little more original with a little more, like, you know, emotion to it and you know, cohesiveness, I think.
Like, there's nothing wrong with making a bunch of, like, 90s, 2000s B-movie schlock. Just make it fun. It doesn't even have to be all that good. If you're spending $30 million on it, you can get away with it being a big old piece of cheese. Yeah. This franchise has survived, I think, because it just knows when to ride the eternally cresting and falling wave of zombie movies. It's
true,
just all, yeah. It made it from the early 2000s one into the 2010s one with Walking Dead. It just keeps on going.
Yeah, I mean, it kicked it off, basically, because, like, as that article said, it came out before 28, because you'd say it was 28 days later that really sort of,
yeah, because that was like a surprise hit.
Because it was 28 Days Later, Dawn of the Dead remake, Shaun of the Dead, kind of.
Those were the three. And then, you know, there were a bunch of others in the wake of that. And then Walking Dead set it off.
Right.
Like, it's always going to be there. Like, zombie movies, you know.
Yeah, I mean, because they're cheap. Of the horror movies, they're really cheap to make. You don't have to, it doesn't require a lot. And, you know, if you get one good kill and one good makeup effect, you're pretty golden.
Yeah. And then this one's got like enough lore to bring the people who like them back. You know, the lore doesn't make any goddamn sense.
And they all run together. I mean, if you marathon this series, they really do, like, they just kind of all blend together.
Oh, yeah, there's famously, Red Letter Media has a video where they marathon the first four, and by the last one, it's, like, literally broken them. They're just laughing hysterically.
I don't know what's happening anymore. Although, the opening of four is one of the most fucking ridiculous openings of any movie ever, where Mila Jovovich is just running around, and it looks so bad.
Yeah, it's very poorly comped and split-screened Mila Jovovich clones all fighting in an underground facility. And then they kind of kill them all, and then you just kind of know, oh, the movie's just going to go back to being, like, what the last couple were.
Right, yeah, where they're trying to get to Alaska, and...
Well, they get to Alaska, but there's nothing there.
Right, right.
Nothing ever pays off. So then they got to go back to L.A., and then they end up on a boat, I think, and they fight Wesker.
The prison in the fifth one?
No, the prison... in the fourth one.
Yeah, it's in L.A., okay.
That's Afterlife. Retribution's the fifth one. That's the one set in the Antarctic facility,
right? Where everyone's a clone. And...
Yeah, and that introduces, and I think that's the one that introduces Ada Wong and Leon Kennedy, I think his name's Leon Kennedy. They're video. I could tell they were video game characters because their outfits were ridiculous. She was wearing like a red cocktail dress, and he had like Peter Parker.
He's got a weird Spider-Man like, emo 3 hair.
Emo bangs.
Yeah, I don't think Claire Redfield from the movies dresses like she does in the games. I think
she's just usually dressed in like she and her brother are usually in like sensible tactical gear,
right? Because they're
which
like,
they kind of do in these
they're
ones.
The Stars. They're part of the Stars team. Basically Colonial Marines of the Resident Evil universe,
right? Who in these movies, the only ones of those you ever really meet are Odette Fair and a couple others in the second movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my god, there's a lot to unpack. There's so much lore. and then you have to go to various fandom wiki pages to like, okay, how does this line up with the video game? Oh, it doesn't at all? Okay, why'd I even check?
Yeah, I looked up Albert Wesker last night, and I was like, what's his deal again? And it was like, here's the Anderson universe, here's the video game universe.
Well, in this universe, or in this one, he's played by Jason O'Mara, he's like a TV guy. He was on the American version of Life on Mars.
Oh,
voiced Batman in a lot of the DC animated movies. He's not very interesting as Wesker. He doesn't have... The next guy, Sean Roberts, has a real scenery-chewing smugness to him that I think really works for this ridiculous video game character. But in this one, it's implied that he's sort of in charge of everything, and people report to him. And then by final chapter, it's the other way around, and Isaacs is in charge of the company, and Wesker is just kind of like his heavy. He's like Michael Ironside in Total Recall.
Yeah, they never really got into the structure or what it is that Umbrella actually does, how it makes money, I don't know, it's a pharmaceutical corporation that makes bioweapons.
Yes, yeah, sure. But really, it was the T-virus was created by one of the founders to keep his daughter from dying of progeria.
And
it turns out that daughter, her mental algorithms created the Red Queen, and Alice is her clone.
Dun, 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 dun. So they finally reveal that in the sixth movie. Yeah.
Yeah, that's like Alice never had her memories wiped. She never had any memories because she's a clone of the founder's daughter.
So wait a minute.
Yeah, let's go.
Wait a minute. So if you are trying to... Okay, so if you're trying to clone someone to get the cure to this virus, is a clone of a clone of a clone of a clone of a clone... do you still get does it degrade? Is it like a copy machine at a certain point?
Well, by multiplicity rules, yes. I don't know if it works by Caminoan cloning technology rules. I don't know how it works in this. I don't know if they make, if they were like, let's make like 500 Alices all at once and keep them in stasis.
Right. Although I think they imply that at some in one of the movies. Isn't there like a big shot of all of them?
Yeah, that's the end of this one. That's the end of Extinction. Because right. I'm going to wake them all up and we're going to go beat you up.
Right.
You've got a warehouse. You got a whole storage unit in the back of red dresses. I can put on all of them and we're good to go.
But that doesn't... Oh, my God. I mean, of course, no one really cared enough to, like, backtrack and look at
it. It is all just a reason for people to shoot and fight zombies and then fight an escalating series of, like, demonic monsters. And this franchise, for whatever reason, has sustained itself where every other video game adaptation from, like, 1990 to 2020... has failed. Doom didn't work. Nope. Assassin's Creed didn't work. You know,
X versus Sever. Ballistics X versus Sever.
Double Dragon didn't work. Max Payne didn't work.
Yeah, I mean, up until Resident Evil, was it pretty much the only video game that actually got a sequel was Mortal Kombat and video game movie
apart from, like, I think maybe some of the, like, really low but like King of Fighters or Tekken movies, like,
but I think that was even before, I think that was after Resident
was that after
Evil.
I think that yeah, was after. I guess yeah because Street Fighter didn't get a sequel. It got its reboot didn't work. That movie, ooh. That movie's magnificent.
It's incredible. If anyone doesn't know what we're talking about, it's Street Fight. Wait, is it Street Fighter: The Legend of Chun-Li, or is it The Legend of Chun-Li?
Yes, Street Fighter: The Legend of the Legend Street Fighter: The Legend of Chun-Li. It's got Kristen Crook from Smallville. It's got Neil McDonough as Bison, and it's got Chris Klein from American Pie in a
giving
performance,
an Oscar-winning performance.
Just like he's just like he thinks he's doing. Kurt Russell in Big Trouble in Little China, and he's not. It's just not working. He's doing like a weird John Wayne thing.
There's a if you go onto YouTube and do a supercut of Chris Klein in Legend of Chun-Li, you'll it's gold.
Don't
just
watch
gold.
The whole movie.
Don't watch the movie. The movie's dog shit. Don't watch the movie.
I think at the end of the day, it's like when I think about every other video game movie I've ever seen, I realize, oh, right, there's a reason why the Resident Evils have sustained themselves. They're getting over a very low bar that very few other movies manage to get over.
Yeah.
Mostly because I think most of them are unbelievably boring.
That too. Yes.
Like the ones I was just rattling off, Assassin's Creed is boring. Max Payne is boring. Doom is boring, and Doom is like has The Rock and Carl Urban and Rosamund Pike in it, and it's boring.
Yeah, it takes a long time to get to that first-person shooter sequence. That's the fun part, and it's not even. It lasts like 5 seconds.
That is fun in air quotes, the size of the pyramids of Giza. It's just like,
although The Rock saying "Semper Fi, motherfucker" is pretty amusing. Really? I saw that in the theater. I have not watched it since, but that has stuck with me.
Let it exist only in your memory.
No, up until now, it seems like now people are sort of treating video game movies like the comic book movies a little bit. I mean, the Sonic movies are pretty good.
Like, they're adapting the ones that work as movies. Like, because with Minecraft, you can just do whatever the fuck you want with it, and it's got this built-in insane Gen Z fan base. The Super Mario Brothers movie, it was just like, let's just make a Mario movie. We don't have to overthink this.
Right, yeah.
And the Sonic ones, I think, just they nearly died on the vine there, but
that's true. I guess the fan freak out of the.
I think also they're set in the real world, and I think that maybe helped them get it off the ground budget wise. And I don't know, they do well enough. I think they've got the right people behind them. It's Jim Carrey's in it, and he knows exactly what kind of movie he's in.
Yeah.
It's the only franchise where he's stuck around for all three movies.
That's true. That's true. I mean, but the Sonic, have you watched those, Sam?
I've seen part of the first. I have not gotten to them yet.
They are shocking.
We will eventually.
We will. You know, my son has watched them, and we went and saw the third one in the theater, and it's they are surprisingly good. Like, actually solid. Like, I'd say they are on par with the first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie in terms of, like, quality.
Okay.
I think they're very...
I mean, they have three movies and a limited series now. It's, you know, credit where credit's due.
I mean, and I think part of it is that they treat, you know, Sonic and his pals, I think they treat them with enough reverence that it doesn't feel like the movie is disrespecting the material, disrespecting the audience, even though it is set in the, you know, it does have, like, a lot of comedic elements that aren't really in the games.
But I think there has always been a bit of an with the exception of a couple like Mortal Kombat and Street Fighter in the 90s, there's always been an element of embarrassment that it's based on a video game, so they try to make it as serious as possible, like Assassin's Creed, or it's something like where they're just kind of mocking the video game aspects of it. It's like oh, that part's dumb. Like, we can skip over that, you know. Or like, something like Pixels, which is supposed to be this love letter to arcade games, but clearly has nothing but fucking contempt for all video game fans of all generations.
Yeah. No, I mean, and, you know, and it's funny, you have something like Ready Player One, which is kind of that, but it's more like a love letter to 80s blockbusters than it is to, say, video games.
I don't know what that movie is a love letter to.
Well, again, air quotes around love letter.
Love letter to incels.
It's not that bad. All right.
Name me a worse Spielberg movie.
Hook?
Oh, you like Hook better than Ready Player One. Shut up. Remember who you're talking to here.
No, I know.
You and Daniel sat me down and were like, come on, look at it, it's Rufio, it's great. They would never do this today. And I'm like, good.
I said that? I don't think I said that. They that doesn't
like,
sound like
I think
me.
It was you and Daniel like, yeah, they would never kill Rufio if they made this movie today.
Oh, maybe. That I might have said.
Sorry, it's like The Breakfast Club. Once you see a movie after you're 20, it just doesn't resonate anymore.
No, I think Hook only works when you're 7 years old. I don't think it can work any time after.
No, I think I saw Dick Tracy instead, and it just scarred me forever. It's like, now I'm this weird misanthrope who's like, I'm scared of facial deformities, but I love Sondheim, you know.
And Madonna.
I mean, I'm fine. She was the killer, though, so I don't trust her.
That's true, yeah.
She was no face.
She was no face. That's a weird movie.
Well, there's technically a third one of those.
Isn't that weird, like, TV special where Warren Beatty interviews himself as Dick Tracy?
For people that don't know, Warren Beatty has the rights to Dick Tracy and has had them for decades after he made his big, weird swing of a Dick Tracy movie in the early 90s. Now, when anyone has the rights to something, you have to do something with it to keep the rights. That's why Constantine Films is constantly was always trying to make a Fantastic Four movie to retain the rights to it. So what Dick Tracy does, because clearly he never, whoever he bought the rights from,
not Dick Tracy.
Oh, sorry. I mean, he thinks he's Dick.
He thinks he's Dick Tracy.
Warren Beatty. He clearly, no one stipulated that he had to make a feature film. So he's done two, like, weird online shorts, like 45-minute long shorts, the first of which was him talking with, I believe it was Ben Mankiewicz from TCM, as Dick Tracy.
In the trench coat and everything.
The yellow trench coat. Just talking about, like, I don't know, like, stuff, movies, the state of the world, what he's been up to since the last film. And then the second one, the one after that, is called Tracy Zooms In. And it's a four-way Zoom call between Ben Mankiewicz, Leonard Maltin, Warren Beatty, and Dick Tracy, who Warren Beatty and Dick Tracy have some sort of beef with each other. So they're having a very awkward, like, conversation, and then it culminates in, like, them sitting together at a restaurant and just talking over each other. It's just... Now, I don't know if there's anything to be done with Dick Tracy. Maybe this is the best use of the character.
I think that's all you can really do. I don't know.
But it is just magnificent. Imagine if Harrison Ford had the rights to Indiana Jones. That's what he would be doing to retain them, so no one else could do anything with them.
Just him interviewing, him getting grumpier and grumpier, and Indiana Jones getting grumpier and grumpier over the years, just doing interviews. I want this. I want this to happen. We should make this happen. I don't care.
Let his legacy characters sleep.
Well, but I'm totally okay with them having, like, meta interviews with each other, talking about whatever.
Him zooming with Han Solo and Indiana Jones.
Yelling at each other. That'd be funny.
I don't want to do this. I just need to get back to... Just can I please go back to the set of Shrinking? I play a real human being.
And I have it's fun. Very,
the writing's really good.
I have a good time.
I have a good time. It's creatively rewarding. I don't have to wear a weird jacket.
It's so weird watching him on that show playing, like... Because he's good. He's great on that. He's great on Shrinking. It's a really fun show. But it's just so strange seeing him play, like, a real human being.
Right.
Because there's some actors who are just, by no fault of their own, are larger than life.
Yeah.
And he's... I don't think he's really been in a lot of movies where he's been, like, a normal guy going through normal, relatable issues. Even when he's, like, in the real world, like, it's The Fugitive or Witness or something.
Right, yeah, he's going through movie problems. Yeah, it is very funny to watch him just play, like, a guy.
Yeah, and he's so good.
He's
really good.
He's great. I just remember when we walked out of Expendables 3... It's Expendables 3, right? And we were like, he was like, I'm not going to stand. Because he's in a helicopter.
Stallone was probably just like, oh, so we've written this so you pilot the helicopter because parents want to see you pilot something again. So you're saying I can stay seated for the majority of the 3 days you have me. And I get to hang out with Jet Li. Okay. That'll be $15 million.
Which I guess we'll talk about one day on this podcast.
Expendables 3.
Whatever that movie is.
Oh, that's the one where he's got to get a new young crew.
He's
like, I don't want my old crew to get hurt. Because Mel Gibson shoots Terry Crews in the leg or something.
Is that the one with Mel Gibson?
The
second one is with Jean-Claude Van Damme.
The second one's got Jean-Claude Van Damme and Scott Adkins are the villains. The first one, it's someone, I forget who, but Stone Cold Steve Austin's one of the villains. And then the third one, it's Mel Gibson and Robert Davi.
Oh, right. Yeah. And Wesley Snipes is in that one, right?
Yeah, Wesley Snipes is in that one. Antonio Banderas is in that one. And, like, Ronda Rousey is in it.
Yeah.
And it's another one where I'm like, is this all you've got for Jet Li? Yes.
Yeah.
But it does have the ending where it implies that maybe he and Schwarzenegger are a couple.
Yes.
And like, there's, like, a fun bickering couple. And I'm like, give me that movie.
I want
that movie right now. Where they're just bickering and traveling around the world like Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
I would, 100%. I would watch that movie.
All Schwarzenegger movies just set up another movie that's more interesting. Like, how I don't care about Terminator Dark Fate, but I do want to learn about Carl's draperies.
Yeah, it's like the world of Terminator Dark Fate, whatever, time travel, whatever. I want to know how this robot has gotten married, is a stepfather, and is
just
selling
how did he
drapes.
Get a knack for selling drapes? What's in his programming that makes him particularly good at that?
Oh, man.
Anyway, Resident Evil Extinction. You know what I gotta say? I like Mila Jovovich. She's so much fun in these movies, and she clearly knows exactly. You know who I would equate her with? She's Jason Statham. She's the female Jason Statham.
No.
And I would say to these movies' credits, this has been a female-led action franchise, which, considering when it started out, was not a common thing. It still isn't a common thing, but... she's really, I mean, she goes back to the 90s, and we as millennials will always, you know, stan Lilo Dallas Multipass. but yeah, she's, I wish she was in more stuff, because, like, she had this, like, long run of, like, very, like, weird mid-2000s, like, genre movies, but, like, every now and then she would do something really fun, like A Perfect Getaway,
right.
Or Zoolander,
yeah.
Or, you know.
Yeah, and she, she commits to it. Like, she's, you know, she's rail thin, but she, like, you're like, oh, yeah, I buy her kicking ass. Like, and, you know, and it there's never a moment whenever I'm watching one of these Resident Evil movies where I don't buy her. She's not, like, the greatest actress, but she has a great presence. You know what I mean?
That's what I was thinking about Jason Statham, too.
Yeah.
It's like, he's, you know, his range is narrow, but if you put him in the right scenario, he's like a really compelling action lead. He's very charismatic.
Yeah, and she's great in A Perfect Getaway. That's
That's a great movie. That movie's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Like, she's, I don't really like the David Harbour Hellboy, but I think she's having a lot of fun as the villain in that, too.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like as she's gotten older, it seems like people don't know what to do with her in some ways. It seems like they don't know how to put her. I mean, she was Milady de Winter in Paul W.S. Anderson's Three Musketeers, which I never
Paul
saw.
Paul W.S. Anderson will always have a spot for her, as long as their marriage is to marriage is like, working.
He's like the ultimate wife guy. Like, these
he
movies
really
are like,
is.
He's like, I am in love with my wife. Look at the cool shit she can do.
He's like Alan Tudyk on Firefly. He's like, have you seen what she wears? Forget about it. Have you ever been with a warrior? Woman.
Exactly.
Yeah, he did his weird Three Musketeers. He did the Monster Hunter movie, which is just a Resident Evil movie with monsters, and Ron Perlman with a anthropomorphic cat. Which that I didn't when I first saw it, I didn't know it was based on a video game series. But the moment there's like a weird cat out of nowhere, like a humanoid cat, I'm like, oh, okay.
It's a video game.
This is someone in the imaginary audience around me just got it, and I didn't. What else did he did Pompeii?
He did Pompeii. I don't think Mila showed up for that.
No. I think.
It was like Game of Thrones meets a disaster movie.
It was Kit Harington and Emily Browning. I think Kiefer Sutherland's in that one.
Oh, God.
And like Carrie Ann Moss.
There's no way that movie is good. That can't I be think like it was some probably, undiscovered gem, right?
No, I doubt it. We'd know by now.
I don't know. It could have just gotten buried under, you know, whatever came out that year. No, it didn't.
No, you're not missing anything. He's done Resident Evils. He's done Death Race. You know,
and he didn't produce any of those because I guess those all went to direct to video.
The Death Race sequels? No, I don't think he's involved in those. I think he's only a credited producer besides Resident Evil stuff. He's an EP on Resident Evil: Welcome to Raccoon City. Oh, no, my mistake. He is a producer on the Death Race 3, and he has a story credit on them. So he's been involved in all of those. He was a producer on DOA, Dead or Alive.
Of course he was.
And the movie Pandorum with Ben Foster and Dennis Quaid. Space movie.
Oh, right,
movie.
That's sort of space, like Event space, Horizon. Yeah.
Space zombie movie.
What a weird career he's had. A kind of an amazing career, though. Like, it's a really, that's an envious career, I'd
No,
say.
I mean, look, he's been working for 30 years now. He's made a whole bunch of movies, and while a lot of them are not great, you cannot say that they are the worst of whatever genre they're in.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're all, and it seems like he's enjoyed, you know, he's has fun making them, and all the movies are pretty fun. I don't know, like, I wouldn't put him as like a top auteur, but I think he's a solid genre guy. You know,
you would be incorrect to list him as one of the worst directors ever.
Yeah,
and I think sometimes people write him off as that, but he hasn't made the worst Alien movie. He hasn't made the worst video game adaptations. He hasn't made the worst Death Race. You know, it's he's still going and. More power to him. You know what? Yeah. Like, most people don't last that long in this business. And he made a fucking 6-film video series based on a video game at a time when video game movies were almost guaranteed to be bad and failures.
Right. And a joke. I mean, they were just a joke almost across the board.
Like, there was not one good one. I mean, I don't know if there are still a lot of great ones, but they were just always written off as being unsuccessful. And I feel like every time one of these came out, people would always be like, another? And I'm like, yeah, another. They make money. People enjoy them. Yeah. They're no fucking dumber than the Transformers movies.
Yeah.
There. I'm fucking defending this dumb, stupid Mad Max knockoff we watched. It was pretty silly. But I can't stay mad at it. I don't know. I can't.
No. Hey, you know what? So, you know what, Sam? Your pick turned out to be A-OK.
On a scale of 1 to 3, I'm giving it a 2.
That's where I was going
to
land, too.
I'm going to right it's in the two. Middle. Because as a part three, to bring it, get back on the rails here, yeah, it does expand the franchise. It's like, let's take this a different aesthetic, a different vibe. Let's introduce some new characters. Let's set up a whole new direction for the franchise to go, even if we're not going to actually do it.
Right.
You know, it did feel like bigger and more ambitious. I think that might have just been like the people behind the camera making it look better than it probably was based on their budget.
Right.
But yeah, I'd say totally worthy third one. I'm guessing this was the one that probably was enough of a shot in the arm to get three more after it.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. And it is the one where they were like, all right, we're going to try something new. We're going to do this Mad Max riff. It's going to be, and we're going to bring in, you know, new actors and, you know, I wouldn't say it like as a big pivot for the series, but it is, I think you're right. I think it is the one that sort of cemented, yeah, this, there's life
in
this.
Give the people, you know, what they want. And that is a sexy Mad Max.
Yeah.
And they only made one Doomsday, so this will have to do.
There you go. There you
fucking
go.
Doomsday, man. That movie.
Doomsday rocks. That movie rocks.
That's almost a Resident Evil movie. It's very in the spirit of these
movies.
Yeah,
it is. Yeah. It's got the same vibe, and it, you know, it, oh God, what's her name? Who's in?
Rona Mitra
has a similar vibe to
very, very Alice-esque action hero.
Yeah.
And it's just very, it's like the really British Resident Evil.
Exactly.
Well, next time up, we're actually going to have a guest. Will and I just guested on the Tuesday Morning Screening Room, which is a podcast by our friend and colleague FM DeMarco. So we're going to we talked about Escape from the Planet of the Apes, we talked about Day of the Dead, we talked about The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. He let us watch three pretty good threequels. Didn't make us watch any trash,
which is rare for this podcast.
Yeah,
so
like just three good movies in a row. We didn't know what to do with ourselves. So we're going to return the favor mostly, and we are bringing him back to talk about a massive franchise that we have not gotten to, because we're going to talk about the 004, 003rd, 007s, Goldfinger, The Spy Who Loved Me, The World Is Not Enough, and Skyfall.
This will be fun. I am not a big Bond fan, so there's
FM. I know my way around Bond. I like Bond a lot. I come into him in waves.
Yeah.
You know, they're all weird artifacts of their time. They have, like, some of them have aged better than others. But FM is a tremendous James Bond fan, and I can't think of anyone better to have on the show, especially to talk about Goldfinger, which is, I would say, when we're talking about the part threes that, like, define the franchise,
this is
top of that mountain for sure. Like, and for a movie that's ridiculous, it's pretty fun as well.
Yeah, this will be great. And check out FM's podcast. Yeah.
Check out the Tuesday Morning Spring. We had something to plug, Will.
We did.
We had a plug. We did it. We're moving up in the world.
Remember to rate, review, and subscribe.
Yes,
to our podcast.
Yes, and other FM's podcast you like. You like that? You like Good Hang with Amy Poehler. Give her a like. And
well, now you got plugged crazy, man. Now you're plugging people we don't even know.
Do you like Fresh Air with Terry Gross and downloaded in podcast form? Why am I blanking on all podcasts? Do you like The Flophouse? Do you like How Did This Get Made?
Blank Check, Action for Everyone. Those are podcasts I like. Yeah. Podcast part three, the plug podcast.
Part for 45 minutes. Hey, we're gonna talk about Resident Evil Extinction. Now we're just gonna name every podcast we can think of for the next 45 minutes.
I mean, you know, there's not a lot to talk about with this movie, so it's not, you know.
Well, it's a classic two on a scale of 1 to 3. It's right. Not that bad, but it's not that great either. It's not giving us a lot, but I'm not sorry I watched it.
Exactly. Yeah.
But the next group, the next batch, we're gonna have a lot to talk about with James Bond. So we're gonna go rest up, you know, stretch, and we will talk to you all soon. Will, this was great. This was fun.
Always great.
I liked playing the Will role when picking the movie.
Hey, that's, you know, it's always fun.
Yeah,
it's always good. You gotta pick the trashy shit sometimes.
I mean, sometimes you can't avoid it. I've looked at our list of movies we haven't done yet, and.
Not a lot of good ones. Although there are part threes coming up this year in the theaters.
That's true. We got some bangers coming out.
So
yeah. Well, until then, everyone, I hope you're having a good end of the summer. Wherever you are, stay cool, stay warm if you're somewhere cold, and we will see you all later.
Adios.
Bye.